Turn up the volume and grab your notebook. It's time to live life consciously. Welcome to Conscious Not Crazy. I'm Corey, your host, and a parent just like you. I'm here to share from my own experiences as a parent and educator to help you better understand the why behind your child's behavior and to provide you with tools to end all of the exhausting and unproductive power struggles. So feel proud you took the first step by tuning into this podcast. I hope this approach to parenting changes your life the way it changed mine. Welcome back to Conscious Not Crazy. I'm Corey, your host, and I'm so grateful to be back here. It's a gorgeous day in Kansas City today, especially for February. I'm not sure when this will come out, but to have 70 or 60 degrees in February is amazing. So I live in Kansas City, and I am just grateful to be sharing a new topic with you guys today. So what has been on my mind, and I've been doing some consulting work at my dear friend, Brianne Bongiovanni, at her school. I had her on here recently, so you could go check out that episode. Bambini Creativity, it's a small private school in Martin City, and I've been doing some consulting there, and it's been great. I like to go in and support the teachers and the staff and work with the kids. The kids are always the best part. But one of the things that I've mentioned in some of the other podcast episodes is positive intent. And for those of you that aren't quite sure what I mean when I say positive intent, it's basically assuming the best in every situation. So let's just say, and I've used this example before, a car cuts you off in traffic. You can immediately react, get mad, let it impact your mood. And then what you're doing is you're giving another person or something outside of you control of your emotion, right? Well, if we approach that situation, not knowing what's going on with the person that just cut me off in traffic, maybe they have a family member in the hospital they're trying to get to. Maybe, I mean, we just don't know their circumstance or situation. Maybe they're late to pick a kid up at school. Not that they should speed, but maybe the intent is positive, whether the behavior is. So that is positive intent. And it's so funny because doing this Conscious Not Crazy class that I've done for over a decade and talking about these topics and just expanding on my own knowledge, I read a lot of books. And one of the books that really resonated with me on this topic was How to Win Friends and Influence People. And this is an old book. Dale Carnegie wrote this book a long time ago. And I just recently read it because I looked at the title and people recommended it, but I looked at the title and I was like, I don't need more friends. So I was deterred by the title, but I finally did dive into the book and it's an amazing book. I highly recommend that you read it. I always get different nuggets of information from all the books I read, and I do audiobooks. I listen to books while I'm folding laundry, doing like a mindless task. I struggle with reading and comprehension, so audiobooks are my jam and I'm able to get through books pretty quick. But How to Win Friends and Influence People, one of the things that he talks about in the book is friendliness begets friendliness. And one of the things I've always shared in my classes is aggression begets aggression. So again, if our child's being aggressive and we respond in an aggressive way, we're going to simply reinforce that aggressive behavior because people's defenses don't go down. They don't become less guarded when they're faced with aggression. They become more guarded. They become more defensive. So that is why it's so important to stay in control of our own emotions. And that is why positive intent is probably one of the most beneficial or important skills that you can master. And it took me years of practice with this because it's hard. It's hard to look at a child hitting another child or taking someone's toy, or it's hard when one of my kids is repeatedly late or doing something to approach that annoying or less than desirable behavior in a positive way. It takes a lot of self-control. So positive intent is necessary and actually vital if you want to be productive with the behavior management of your toddler of your elementary school age child or even your teenager. And I'm going to give you some specific examples. And I'll start with the younger kids and work up to the older. It's funny, a lot of people that see Conscious Not Crazy and that have known I've done this for a long time assume this is for little kids. This is not. This is information you could take to your job. You can use positive intent with your spouse. You can use positive intent with your significant other or your coworker or your boss. And we'll talk about that. But it deserves a podcast all on its own because it's such an important aspect of behavior management and of modeling, coaching, and teaching kids a missing skill. Because if we utilize positive intent, we are approaching the situation without judgment. And we are putting the person's defenses down. So now we can gather more information instead of relying on assumptions. Because we all have CD-ROMs in our own head based on our own upbringing and life experience, right? That taints our perspective. Because perspective's everything. The same behavior could happen in front of me and it could happen in front of you. Our interpretation, our perspective might be totally different. Approaching it with positive intent takes my judgment out of it so I can be much more effective in coaching and directing my child on how to solve their problem. So let's start if you've got a preschooler, okay? Because a lot of you guys probably even have more than one kids in your house. And let's say you have a preschooler that just built this really cool Lego structure, okay? They've worked for a really long time and they have this awesome structure and baby brother comes over. It whacks it and knocks it down. And I say baby brother, like a toddler comes over and whacks it down. Maybe one kid's five and one kid's two. So I'm going to approach the child who got their work down could react. They could try to hit the child. They could push the child away, which would be a natural reaction if someone's coming to destroy your work. And for them, it's their work. It's important to them. It may not appear important to us because we're adults and we have much bigger things to worry about. But when you're five or four and you build a tower, that is the most important thing to you in that moment. So we need to kind of step into their shoes and see it from their perspective. And then the little two-year-old or three-year-old that knocked over the work doesn't have the ability to articulate their want, need, or desire. So to engage with the child, they knock over the work. Maybe it's that they're feeling left out. Maybe it's that they want to go play with them. Usually the child wants to engage and play or take part in what's going on. And so they're getting attention by knocking it over. That's usually the case. It's not always the case, but we can usually assume that and create some dialogue. So I would walk over to the kids as quickly as I could get there if I witnessed this. I'd put my hand on both kiddos and I would say, oh no, what happened? I noticed. You're going to hear me say, I noticed over and over again. And when you notice something, you are recognizing the behavior with all judgment set aside. So it is the best way to approach any child doing anything. Like, I notice you forgot your lunch again. I notice that you don't have everything you need. I notice it just is received differently than like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you forgot your lunch again. I mean, where are your shoes? What is the matter with you? Why do I have to tell you this every day? Do you feel the difference? You should be able to feel the difference. Hey, I notice that you don't have your lunch, because it gives them an opportunity to solve their own problem and not feel judged and not feel attacked. And it's not saving them. It's actually teaching them problem solving skills. So I've got these two kids and let's say, like I said, maybe two or three and four or five. And he knocks over. It's like, well, what happened? I noticed your work got knocked over. That is so sad. I see. I noticed that you look very sad. And usually they'll nod. Yeah, he did it. He knocked my work over or whatever. And then I'll see the other kiddo looking like deer in headlights. Like, yeah, I know I did something wrong. Probably shouldn't have done that. But those are the skills and tools I have. I'm missing skills. We need to view the child that does the thing that we would typically judge as bad as missing skills. So I look at that child, I'm like, oh no, did you want to play with that? Were you hoping you could build too? People, that is positive intent. And that sounds weird, but what happens is when I do that, Now that child is paying attention. That child is engaged because when I ask a child questions, I've said this before, they are forced to go, or any person a question, you're forced to go to the cognitive processing centers of the brain. So that's where you think and problem solve. If I judge or attack the child or shame the child, that child's going to go to fight or flight. It's just their natural reaction. And again, they're missing skills. So we need to approach it as the adults in a way that supports them where they are developmentally and coach them through a better way. So now that I have their attention, I'm acknowledging that this kid is sad or disappointed or mad, whatever they're feeling, that had their work destroyed. And then I'm acknowledging that this child, the intent was they just wanted to play with it, but they are missing the skill. So then I'm going to say, wow, maybe ask them what you could do to be helpful. Ask them what they need. Do I want to assume that that child wants this child to help them build it back? Absolutely not. Some kids will want the help. Some kids will want to build it back themselves. And either is perfectly okay. I don't choose that. I teach the child to have an opinion and a voice because the more choices kids get, the stronger their confidence is and the more capable adult they'll become. Because to be a capable adult, you need confidence. So from a very early age, we want to start a foundation of your words matter. Your opinion matters. We just set the parameters and the boundaries of which they have choices. So we don't make it a free-for-all. They get to choose everything. That's not what I'm saying. They get free choice with everything. No, I'm setting parameters for their choice. Developmentally appropriate choices. And this is a developmentally appropriate choice. Do you want them to help you build it back? So I might say, ask them if they want help building it back or what you could do to be helpful. And the child will say, what could I do to be helpful? And they feel bad. The kid that knocked the work over, even if they're a toddler, they genuinely do feel bad. And they might say, no, I don't want any help. That's pretty common. Or they might say they want help. But let's say in this case scenario, they don't want any help. And I'm like, okay, so it looks like they don't want any help. But I noticed you were wanting to build. Do you want to ask them if you can build next to them or if you can build when they're finished? What do you notice about what I'm doing? I'm giving two positive choices as well. I'm giving the child voice and choice. Again, building that confidence. So I'm asking this child, I'm coaching them on what to ask. So can I build next to you with some of the other Legos that you're not using? Or can I use it when you're finished? And I'll say, I know they're wondering if they can build next to you. Are you worried? And they might look like, no, I don't want them building next to me. They just wrecked my work. I don't trust them. So then what I would say is ask them if they can keep your work safe. Ask the other child, can you keep my work safe? And that child's most likely going to say yes, because they're motivated. They want to build next to them and they look up to them, especially if it's an older kid. So they're going to say, yeah, okay. So which Legos? Then I'm going to go to the kid that was using the material first. I am a firm believer. We don't force kids to share. We don't. That's not a real world thing. If you're working on a project at your job and somebody comes in and needs something you're working with to do this big presentation, you shouldn't necessarily have to share that with them. You can use it when I'm finished, or you can go find another one. I don't know. Forcing kids to share is, I don't think, appropriate. So you can give them a voice and give them the words to ask if the other child will share. But I just don't think forcing kids to share is the right route to go. So in this case, the kiddo might say, well, I'm not using these Legos. Okay, it looks like, would you like to use these Legos to build here or here? And I might give them two choices, especially if they're little. And they'll say, here. And they feel super confident and they sit down and build. And now we know the work's going to be safe. So just imagine if I had walked up to that same scenario. I was like, oh, stop. What are you doing? Why would you do that? The tone's totally different. I've lost all control of the situation. The child feels attacked. The child feels shame. The child's going to fight or flight. No learning has occurred. Making one child the victim and kind of one child, I don't like the word bully, but we'll say the one kid, the bad kid, one kid, the good kid. And that's not what we want to do. We are all going to make mistakes. And so we want to honor those mistakes and coach kids on how not to make those same mistakes. Now, a child that age is probably going to knock somebody's work over again. And this is going to take a lot of repetition because it takes time to learn these new skills. So let's fast forward. Let's use a scenario. I use one for adults, like somebody cutting you off in traffic. I've used this one before too, like you show up late to work and you say, hey, I noticed you were late today. Is everything okay? That would be approaching that with positive intent as opposed to, why are you late? What's going on? And just attacking the person. Again, if you ask them if it's an unusual thing for them to be late, approach it with positive intent, you're going to get the truth. That's the other thing. Kids are going to be more inclined to give you the truth when you approach them with positive intent because they don't feel shame and judged. Nobody wants to feel shame and judged. Feeling judged is just not a good feeling, you guys. So let's say we have a teenager and let's say they call somebody a name. I mean, my kids, yeah. I mean, they've called me names for sure. I was called a butthead once in the Target checkout. But if my teenager says something or lashes out or is like, I hate you, again, I can take it personal, but why? Notice it for what it is. It's a symptom of something else. They're mad. You took their phone. You told them they couldn't go to the party. You're setting boundaries. That's your job as a parent. We are not their friends. So I've told my kid no to something and my kid's pissed off. And so they're going to lash out at me and I'm going to stay really calm. And it's so amazing. It is so freeing, you guys, if you can get to this point. And I have gotten to this point. I'm not saying I never get triggered, but it is few and far between. But it is such a freeing feeling because I'm just like, oh, we're doing that thing again. I'm like, yeah, you're frustrated. I noticed you're frustrated. Those are really hurtful words. Hate's a strong word. So I might say something like that. And then usually if a kid's in fight or flight or they're really mad, I'm going to walk away. I'm going to give them a minute. But I'm not judging their behavior because that's not helpful. I'm not shaming the behavior because 9 times out of 10, my kid's going to come back around and be like, I'm sorry, mom. I didn't mean it. I'm like, I know you didn't. I'm like, so let's talk about that. When they come back around, when that cortisol has left the body, cortisol needs time. The bottom line is cortisol needs time to come out of the body. And once that's gone and they're able to get back to the thinking part of their brain, because when they're calling you names and yelling at you and saying, I hate you, they're in fight or flight, right? And that's because you're setting boundaries and that's your job as a parent. So don't stop doing it. And actually, boundaries feel safe. Boundaries feel safe to kids. They will never tell you that, but I can assure you it makes them feel safe. It makes them feel loved. It's the most loving thing you can do. So they've said the hurtful things and now they're coming back around and they're remorseful. I'm like, I love you. I love you no matter what. You could say anything to me. Now let's talk about this. You were frustrated. You didn't like that, but why did I have to take your phone? Why did I have to take it? Tell me about that. And then this is when we can hold them accountable. And I usually just ask lots of questions. Again, cognitive processing center, that's where I want them to stay. So why did I take your phone? And then they tell you why you took their phone. And maybe it's because they didn't get off of it at the time or bring it to you at the time. Like my son has to bring me his phone every night at 10 during the week. And if he doesn't, then he's potentially going to lose his phone, right? So that's the consequence for his choice. And I remind him of that. And I shouldn't have to remind him every night, don't forget, it's 10 o'clock, bring your phone. I'm like, you need to be responsible. I mean, he's going to be driving soon. He wants to get behind the wheel of a car and do, I mean, grown-up decision-making things. But a lot of responsibility. That's a huge responsibility to get behind a car. And if you make a mistake behind a car, it could have serious consequences. So what I tell my kids is you want to have that responsibility. You've got to show up in these other areas. A friend of mine just told me, and I love this. I was at the gym training a client and this other gentleman that trains with another trainer, because I'm a trainer at a gym too. I'm all about healthy mind and body, guys. He said he requires 3 things from his kids. And I loved this. And I've taken this from him. He says, I need you to do it. You say you're going to do. I need you to do it consistently. And I need to see you. Because if I can't see you, and this applies more to teenagers, if I can't see you, I don't trust you. meaning if you're always being sneaky, hiding, I need visibility, I need consistency, and I need you to follow through on your word. That's what that says to me. So if my son wants to get a car and have these big responsibilities, I'm like, you need to show up consistently with these little responsibilities, like getting to bed at a decent time on a school night, bringing me your phone at 10 p.m., getting up for school by yourself without me having to come down to wake you up. So those are some very basic things. So if you feel like you're in this constant, like, oh, they just can't ever get it together, and you have a choice as a parent. You're not a victim either. So don't be a victim. Set some clear boundaries. Give them a motivator. Maybe the motivator is that they want a car. Maybe the motivator is that they have a party they want to go to. Well, I need to know you're going to make good choices and be responsible at that party. So the way you show me that is to prove responsibility right now with these little things. Because I need to see consistent responsibility. Are they going to make mistakes? Yes, I'm an adult and I make mistakes. We just don't want to consistently make the same mistakes. That's when there's a problem. And that's when we need to kind of reevaluate. So I tell my kids, because they'll, a lot of times they'll be remorseful. I think I talked about this. My kids are like, I'm sorry. I wish I could undo it. And I'm like, no, mistakes happen. Move on. Don't get stuck in that yuck. Move forward. What do we do about it now? Learn from it. The biggest teacher in life is failure. And too often in our society today, kids are so afraid of failure. They haven't been given opportunities to fail. And so it's happening. As parents, it's your job. As parents, it's your job to let your kids fall flat on their face in a safe environment. And if you don't, you're doing them a disjustice. I say this because I mean it. You're setting them up to reach a difficult situation. Maybe they go start a job and they get this hint of this feeling of, I don't know if I can do this. I'm feeling overwhelmed, and they bail. You don't want your kid doing that. You want them to face discomfort and push through it. But if we don't ever let them fail so they can learn what it feels like to fail and come back, they need that. But if we don't give them that opportunity, they're going to really struggle. And in my opinion, society as a whole and parents as a whole nowadays don't give their kids enough opportunities for failure. We take them to lunch when they forget it. We wait for them for forever in the car. I don't know if any of you guys have teenagers that play sports, but I go to pick my kids up at practice and I'm like, oh no, we're not doing this. I'm not sitting in the car and wasting 45 minutes of my time waiting on you. I said, so if you're going to consistently come out late, I'm just going to come at this time because my time matters. And when you disregard my time, that's not cool. That's like telling me you don't care. I don't matter. And I do. I want to hold my kids accountable. I want to give them choices. So I can come at this time, but I need to see you. If you're not here, this is when I'm coming going forward. That's a boundary. That's me giving them a choice, setting the boundary, telling them what I'm willing to do and what I'm not willing to do. And that is super important, but approaching it in a positive way. Like, you're not a bad kid. You guys, maybe you're talking to a group of kids. You're not bad kids. You made a poor choice, a poor decision. A decision doesn't define your identity. And that is big. A decision does not define your identity. It's something we learn from and something we reflect on. And we talk through it with them on how we can do it different next time. And again, this book is awesome because it just talks about really genuinely understanding people and valuing what they have to say, listening to them, listen to your kids, ask them questions. I ask my kids questions all the time and they will give you information. And especially when we get into these teenage years where we know they're maybe experimenting with drinking and who knows what else. I just ask them, I'm like, well, what happens if you drink? And maybe you're playing sports. Do you think that's going to help you become a better athlete, or it's going to maybe not make you feel awesome at practice the next day? I get that you're going to try things. I get that you're going to do things, but let's think about the repercussions and the consequences that go along with that. And that's the connection we need to make so they can make those choices for themselves. And they're going to make bad ones. So when they make those bad ones, we don't want to shame and judge them. We want to be there for them to coach them through it. And I tell my kids, I'm like, you get in a bad situation, you call me. We will discuss it later. But don't make a bad situation worse out of fear of my reaction to it, because I love you and I'm here as your parent to guide and support you through it. That is my job. And there's nothing you could do. There's nothing you could say that would not make me love you. So positive intent, assuming the best in every situation. The other thing that does for us is when whatever you focus on, you get more of, right? So if we're constantly nagging and picking at all the things we don't like about our kids or the behaviors, like you're always this, what we're doing is we're building a narrative in their minds where maybe they identify as I'm just always late. So this becomes their internal dialogue. We're actually reinforcing a very negative internal dialogue. Guys, I spent years breaking the habit of my own negative internal dialogue. And that is the one amazing thing. You have to be super reflective on self to parent in this way, because we have to recognize our own flaws and understand where this shows up in us and correct it to parent in this way. But it is, again, the most freeing thing. It's like if I catch myself with a negative thought, well, I used to tell myself I'm not book smart because I struggle with reading. I didn't retain information when I read it when I was a kid. So say face it, like, oh, I'm just not book smart. Well, first of all, book smarts isn't everything. I have a very high EQ. And what I found in life is I'm very smart in that regard. I understand people. I'm intuitive. Human behavior is my jam, right? So I say that. That's what I say now. And you know what? I am book smart. I just needed audiobooks. Can I sit down and read this? I could do it. It would be a struggle. I won't retain a lot of it. I'll have to read it over and over. And my son's the same way. He has to put music on. I have to put music on to read. So it's like it distracts that ADHD part of our brain. Every person's different. We don't want to create negative narratives. You just can't ever remember your stuff. Well, I'm just forgetful. You keep making, I just make poor choices. There's no motivation to change the behavior if that becomes their internal narrative. So I encourage you, the next time your child does some undesirable behavior, you step back and you think about the why behind the behavior. And I did a whole podcast on that. You can go back and listen to it. But don't see the behavior for what the behavior is. Think about what's motivating that behavior and then see how you can approach it. Like if a child breaks something, right? Child drops a glass and we freak out because they break something. I never did that. I will say I never did that when my kids were little. Was I kind of annoyed that they just broke one of the glasses and my set of dishes? Yeah, probably. But it doesn't undo the break. Me reacting to it because I don't like that it happened doesn't make the glass not broken. The glass is broken. So I have two choices here. I'm like, oh, that's scary. You are trying to carry that to the sink and it slipped. Yeah. And maybe they were running. Let's say they were running with the glass. But I noticed you were running. Should we run with glass? No. What did we learn? We don't run with glass. Or maybe they weren't paying attention. Whatever it was, noticing that they didn't. No kid typically isn't throwing a glass down. Now they might. Maybe they throw a glass down. Maybe they're having a tantrum and they're mad and they throw something and break it. So one of my kiddos was mad and ripped their coat when they were, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 off a coat hook. And it broke the coat hook. And I was like, oh, you were mad. What do you notice? It's broken. Yeah, you were mad and you pulled it really hard. Should we pull things when we're feeling mad? Maybe we should not. Maybe we should sit down and breathe. Give them something else they can do instead. When we do things like that, like, I mean, how many adults have ever seen throw a cell phone because they're mad? Maybe the conversation isn't going well. Do you think they feel awesome about breaking their phone after the fact? No. They need more coping skills. So the great thing about this is the more you understand it, the more you will actually understand yourself and your own triggers, and then you'll be able to model the behavior. But all I can say is assume the best. Read this book. I'll put it in the show notes. Be positive and notice behavior. And when you're positive and you approach life in this manner, you feel better. Nobody wants to think negative. I tell my kids, I mean, I drive them nuts, you guys. I mean, if they have like a mad face, I'm like, smile. Just the act of smiling will make you feel better. You'll get like a dopamine rush just from smiling. I make myself do it. If I'm having a moment of self-pity or I'm stressed, usually I breathe. I take a deep breath in. I tell myself, nobody's dying. I'm healthy. My kids are healthy. Nobody's sick. We need perspective. We need more perspective in the world. We get too bent out of shape on shit that doesn't matter. We just do. That's just a fact. So we just need to take a deep breath, have more gratitude, and approach things in a positive manner. And remember, notice their behavior and think about the why. Think about the motivator before you judge it. All right, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. I look forward to chatting with you again soon. I'm excited to have some more guests on coming up. So please like and follow my podcast. And you can find me on Facebook too, Conscious Not Crazy by Corey. Thanks so much. Take care. Thanks so much for tuning in to Conscious Not Crazy. I hope you're finding comfort in knowing you are not alone. Parenting is hard and the struggle is real. I am forever grateful for this amazing community of like-minded parents striving to simply do better than yesterday. Until next time, keep on living life consciously. I can't wait to connect with you again soon. Be sure to follow me on Facebook and visit my website, consciousnotcrazy.com. All the details can be found in the show notes. Now go get back to the never-ending, exhausting, and yet most fulfilling job you'll ever do.